Aloha everybody, this is The War Room Show and it is sponsored by thewarhq.co.uk. Why not go there now? And we will give you a wee coupon to give a little bit more money back in your pocket. The coupon code is POD21, that's POD21. And if you apply that, you'll get a little bit of a discount and get your minis in a wee bit cheaper. So why not pay themorehq.co.uk a wee visit just now. Thank you guys, and on with the show. Aloha folks, Paul here. As you know, it's the War Room podcast. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the Las Vegas Open and the army and possible tactics that I can use with my Dutch army. So a shout out to all my friends at the Dutch May 40 community site, who have been very helpful in putting the army together for me. I'd like to do a wee shout out to the Snafu podcast, who've just put up a podcast in the last day or so. So if you like listening to a podcast, go and hit the guys over at Snafu and listen to their podcast. It's about a 3-hour long podcast, or just under, so you might want to do it in chunks, or you got a lot of painting, sit down, work your way right through that and listen to the guys at Snafu. But on with the show. So Las Vegas Open, last year I went to Las Vegas Open for the first time. It is a fantastic tournament to go to if you want to take the other half. There is plenty to do in Las Vegas. It's probably the cheapest time of the year to get to and stay in Las Vegas. So it makes quite a cost-effective trip, relatively. And, let's say, plenty to do. The competition itself last year was just over one day. And again, this year it's just over one day. The actual Las Vegas Open event, which is mainly a 40k event, it lasts sort of Friday through to Sunday. So last year I was a little bit disappointed there wasn't a bit more. And again this year I'm a little bit disappointed there isn't a bit more on for bolt action. It would have been nice maybe to do a wee, even an informal skirmish combat patrol type event on the Friday night, and maybe have a 2-day competition that ended early on the Sunday for those American guys that need to get back, or whatever. But it is what it is. They decided to do it as a 1-day event again this year. I of course will be fine, because I'll be meeting up with John Russell from Warlord and Alan Rockwell from GC Minis, and so I'll have things to do on Friday night and Sunday. As I think I've said before, we'll try and get John to spill a few beans about what's coming up at Warlord. I know there's a lot of exciting things for bolt action going on behind the scenes at the moment. However, back to the Las Vegas Open. So last year, it was a great event to go to, don't get me wrong, and I don't mean things as criticism of my good buddy Jay, who organised the event, but it was fairly poorly attended, I would have thought. Off the top of my head, and I may be wrong, so don't shoot me down, I seem to think there was only about 12 or 14 of us all together, which made a nice little group, and we kind of all got on together, and it was good fun. But I would have thought something like Las Vegas Open would be a 40-plus event. So, going back this year, hoping to see lots more things. There's different event organisers this year, and off the top of my head, it's the guys from the War Room store, and the guys at Best Coast Pairings that are kind of organising it. And I do know through looking at the what's it called? It's the WGTC, which is the War Games Tournament Circuit Facebook group, that in actual fact the event has been sold out. So that's fantastic. There's going to be a good crowd there. I'm not too sure how many was the maximum number, but it's fantastic that it's sold out, and I'm really looking forward. We're going to meet lots of new people. The thing that the guys that are organising it do, and they do really rather well, is they use software for this, which is called... Oh man, I just told it. The Best Coast Pairings. If you go to Best Coast Pairings, they've got an app you can download. They've got one as a tournament organiser and they've got one as a player. And you log on, and in actual fact, live at the event, you just put your results into the app and that updates the tournament organisers, and he can tell you what your next game is and all that stuff. And it worked fantastic. I've used it a few times myself for competitions. Although I'm still really learning how to use it, I need to go through and look at the recent how-to videos they've done for it. But it's a fantastic little system, because most people, almost everybody these days, has a smartphone. It's a free app for players, so we'll be using that, so that'll be fun. The players pack, I think, and again, I don't mean this as a criticism, it's more as an observation, because, to be honest, a few player packs I've done in the past have not been outstandingly brilliant. Some have been pretty good, but there's always something to learn from doing competitions. The players pack has been a little bit skinny in places, particularly for people coming from overseas, and I think there are one or two of us this year. I think I was perhaps the only one last year, but I think there's maybe two or three guys who are coming from overseas. And first of all, the players pack has it become apparent that they're going to score soft points, which is fantastic. I'm all for that. I love it. But there's no real hard and fast explanation of what the soft points are, or how they'll be decided, or what they're out of, or what portion of the final result they'll be, which it's not a big thing, but it does help you to prepare, so because you don't want to turn up having travelled thousands of miles at an event and find out you're the only idiot who didn't know something. You know what I mean. They've made the choosing the armies a bit clearer this year, in so much as that it's 1,000 points, it's single generic platoon, and is it generic platoon? No, it's not. Single platoon at 1,250 points. However, they've put a dice cap of 14 dice on it. Now, for somebody that wants to run an inexperienced army, that seriously hinders them. So I am running an inexperienced, or I would have been running an inexperienced army. I would have been running Dutch. And to run the Dutch list in my historic form, what I have in the army and available to me, that I can actually get into a Dutch 1940s list, because they are seriously hampered by the lack of choice that that particular Dutch list has, and there are other lists like that. I would probably be pushing it to run about 1,000 points with the current list I'm playing. I would probably need to put units in there which aren't historical, and I was a little disappointed with that. I think dice cap, again, you don't want to be too stupid with dice. I can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it a fairer playing field. And to be honest, there was a slight bit of controversy last year, mainly caused by myself, taking 4 howitzers and 4 snipers in a double platoon. But I only played that in one game. It was a de-escalator. But anyway. So the point, I can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it a fairer playing field. I think 14 dice limits them a bit. I think instead of having more diversity, you're going to end up with a lot of kind of what they call cookie cutter lists, which is going to be, there's going to be a predominance of veteran armies there. There's probably going to be a predominance of large tanks, I'm guessing. So I would imagine almost every list is likely to have a tank in it. Indeed, I have a tank in it myself. The mighty Carden Lloyd tankette. I can't remember how many points it is. How many points is a Carden Lloyd tankette? Look at the bottom. Oh, it's a whole 55 points. It's 7 plus open topped, and it is armed with the mighty forward facing hull mounted MMG. So I can't even pile points in by putting a big tanken, because the Dutch, all they have in the 1940s list is a Carden Lloyd tanker. It's my only choice. Not that I'm bitter or anything. In fact, in the whole list, my highest point sink is the armoured car, which is 135 points. Anyway, so I think they've hampered themselves. I think a more realistic and practical dice cap, if you're going to have one, is about 17 dice, I would have said, at 1250 points. But that's just my opinion. As I say, just an observation rather than meant to be a criticism. I think the guys are going to do a fantastic job this year, and I am really looking forward to seeing them. And I think we'll probably try and get them on the show to talk a little bit about this games tournament thing they've got them on, the War Games tournament circuit that they've got going on, and be a bit clearer about that. So, Las Vegas, fantastic. It's going to be a great time. We're going to see lots of new people. I'm having to work quickly to make a battle board, because that's included in the soft points. So, travelling all those miles, I wasn't going to take a battle board, because I didn't think it was necessary, and it just makes it easier for travelling. But if I want to get those points, and by gosh, those Dutch are going to need those points, I'm pretty sure, I've got to get a battle board done. So I've got exactly a week to do a battle board. So we'll get going on that. But what are we taking to Las Vegas, and what are our tactics likely to be? Well, we're taking First Lieutenant, like I usually do. This time, instead of just one extra guy, he is going to come with two extra guys, so a three-man unit. It's going to be regular, because I can't take it as veteran. What I quite like to do with the smallest infantry squads is take them as veteran if I can, because quite often, being veteran, you put them behind cover and you put them down, they tend to be very difficult to take out. So anyway, that's First Lieutenant. Possibly going to use the snap turret with him. He's pulling two extra dice, which would allow both my artillery pieces that I have in this list to fire at the same time. Makes sense. Infantry. Now, I'm taking four squads. In fact, I'm taking five squads of infantry in this. Four of those squads are going to be 11-man squads with light machine gun. To be honest, light machine gun probably isn't worth its points, but we've got it in there anyway. I would normally take all these units as inexperienced, which would give me the third unit for free. Again, having the free unit in inexperienced doesn't help with this, because of the 14 dice cap, it's just another dice that doesn't spend points. So what I've done is I've taken all these units in regular. At regular, they're 130 points each, but it means that I pay for my fourth one. So at least I'm paying for the dice. And I have a fifth infantry squad, again regular. These are eight guys with no light machine gun. So I've got five regular squads altogether. Now, usually when I'm playing the Dutch, the inexperienced squads, you've got to be fairly careful with. I tend not to bring them on at the start, or at least certainly not all of them, because with having four big squads, the table can get quite crowded, and you can find yourself making it difficult for other units to move. Big squads also are quite difficult to hide behind things, so if you've got one or two places where you can put one of these inexperienced squads behind a bit of cover, and when you go down, that means that at normal range they're at least sixes to hit, which helps them. If you can stop them being hit, it helps those inexperienced squads to survive much, much better. So one of the things really is to put them behind cover and put them down, which is taking the pins off every time if you keep them down, and then using them at the last minute to grab objectives. Or outflanking them or reserving them can be quite effective if you're looking to take objectives. Because these guys are regular, so that's going to be a wee bit new for me. They're going to last a bit longer, obviously, than the inexperienced guys would, and I might be inclined to actually get these guys out flanking to come on with shots, because they're not taking the minus one now that they're regular. You're going to have to remember that. They're not taking the minus one for being experienced for shooting, and there's a fair chance they could put up a half decent fight if they come against something. I'm expecting to see quite a lot of Gurkhas at Las Vegas. I don't know why, I'm not basing that on anything, but I can see Gurkhas are becoming a bit more popular than they were. And if we see Gurkhas, we ain't going anywhere near them if we can help it. So that's my five squads. I've got small squads. Now, the one small squad, small infantry squad I don't have is a medium machine gun team. And simply because I don't think it's worth the points under any circumstances, almost. But my small squads, as I said just earlier, I take as veteran where possible. So the anti-tank rifle team, two-man, so it's obviously a small team to hit, making it forced to hit it anyway. If I can get it behind a bit of cover, these guys most of the time don't even need to go down. And anti-tank rifle, I'm finding it to be more and more useful. I've played anti-tank rifles before and they've always been very underwhelming, but now in this version they have a lot of value in just being a difficult unit to actually take out, and they can be quite annoying for people, and they're quite good for keeping small armoured vehicles and transports at bay a little bit. So we've got the anti-tank team in there, he's just going to play a harassing role. We've got the medium mortar with a spotter, that's veteran. I tend to hide the medium mortar behind something, and with this spotter and other spotters in general, I will normally try and put them in a position where on a run move they would take or contest objectives. A lot of people don't realise or forget about the spotters and don't realise that they can actually take and contest objectives. So it's quite a handy thing. And the two other spotters there, I've got one for each of the two artillery pieces in this list. It's worth noting. And a wee hodzo nod there to Pete from the Leicester Juggernauts, who caught me out with that at the Warlord GT. Aloha all you guys from Leicester. And what else we got? So we've got the medium mortar team. I tend to hide it behind something. I try and keep it spotter within an objective, and I try to keep the mortar itself within an objective. A lot of people forget that mortars can actually run 12 inches. A lot of people think they can only run 6, but mortars can run 12 inches. So again, quite handy for capturing or contesting objectives if you can get them in a good place. We've got the sniper team at veteran. I love sniper teams. Again, he's a small team. He has the ability to take out fixed team weapons, so MMGs, mortars, that type of thing. He can take those out in one shot. He can take officers out in one shot. He's quite handy. I wish I had more of them. Technically, the Dutch didn't have snipers, they had marksmen. So, yeah, it's called a sniper, but we're playing it as a marksman, just to keep my historical bent on this. You may be able to tell that whilst being within the bounds of history, I do like to try and put up the best fight possible. So moves us on to the heavier stuff. Being a Dutch army, we can take a free light or medium artillery piece. In this case, or anti-tank gun. In this case, we're taking a free medium artillery. Wonder if I wouldn't have been better taking a medium anti-tank gun in actual fact. I'll explain in a second. But we've got free medium artillery, giving us a 3-inch template, and we've taken a spotter with him. And what more can I say? It's a good free piece of kit. I sometimes wonder whether the larger template artillery pieces are actually worth it. They tend playing the, I'm not a great artillery player, even though I played four last year. If you watch the videos from last year, they were singularly unimpressive, to be quite honest with you. They tend to get targeted quite early on, so they do take a fair bit of fire, which keeps the pressure off the rest of the army. People do tend to get concentrated on, and you tend to lose them by turn three, to be honest. I seriously wonder about the practicality or the worth of taking heavy artillery. You can't move it very easily. To move it, you've got to hitch it up. You can turn it, but you can't move it. So they tend to get very easily targeted by mortars very early on, or other howitzers. And as I say, you tend to lose them by turn three. You can't move them, at least with medium and light artillery. You can manhandle them 6 inches if you feel they are getting a wee bit too ranged on. So, having said that, I'm also taking a heavy artillery piece, which needs a tractor with it, which eats up a dice. If I'd really thought about this, I think I would have taken 2 medium howitzers, and then at least the artillery crews, if one's taken out, the artillery crew from another can swap over to the other gun if you keep them within 12 inches of each other. Usually with the 2 artillery pieces, I'm going to keep them roughly 12 inches apart anyway, because I'm going to put my officer in the middle of them if possible, so that he can snap to it and get these guys to go. The alternative is to put the howitzer close to the mortar so that I can snap to it with the officer if he's within 6 inches and fire those 2 pieces off together. So I think my artillery choices here are being rubbish, and I'm just about to go and look. I think a better choice, in actual fact, to be honest, there's not many times where you really need a 4-inch template. A 2-inch template is plenty. I'm trying to have a look and see what... I don't really have a 2-inch template other than light artillery. And why would you take light when you can take a medium for free? Oh, it's difficult in this list. What we do have available... I mean, we've got very little artillery available to us. We've got a Bofors gun. Oh, it's a 1-inch template. But you get 2 shots... you get a bit more penetration. The Bofors gun might have been as good as anything, but as it is, we're taking the heavy artillery and the medium artillery for this game. Heavy artillery, yes, you can take out a building, and that could be quite handy if you've got the right scenery set up. It possibly means that it's going to discourage anybody from going in a house. I need to check up on the rules, because I think if you ruin a house, it becomes a ruin, and a ruin is area terrain, so you can't shoot through it anyway, so you can't really destroy a house to get line of fire, I don't think. I need to go and check up the rules for that before I play this. So, that's the heavy artillery. As I said, we've got the Trado tractor, 18 points, it is a veteran. And I've done that to make sure that if we've got one of the scenarios where everything's off the park, I could, if I wanted, and I don't really know why I would, but I could bring it on as a reserve piece. I don't think I ever would, but it used up points, and I really needed to make to just use up the points, to be honest. So it's in there. So down to the final 2 choices, one of which I've already mentioned. The Carden Lloyd tankette, you know what it is. I'm going to use it kind of like a wasp. The idea is that it's going to be a pain in the backside for somebody. It is a reasonably priced MMG, considering that it's mobile, it has some armour, you can't take it out with a sniper. So it could be a little bit of annoyance. It's tracked so it can go over stuff, although I couldn't imagine that one of these Trado tractors would ever be able to actually run over a wall, but hey, it's the rules we're playing to. So I'm not quite sure about my Carden Lloyd tankette. I haven't played with it an awful lot yet. But I'm imagining it's going to be like a Wasp, hopefully just annoying people and taking shots. It would be so much better if it had recce on it, considering it's just such a small vehicle. But anyway, it doesn't. And then my armoured car is the Landsverk armoured car, which is sort of an iconic piece for my 1940 army. It is a +7, fully enclosed, recce vehicle. It's got a light anti-tank gun. It's got coaxial MMG, and it's got a forward-facing and a rear-facing MMG. So, usual things for you guys that know about recce. It's liable to be one of the last dice that I use. If I haven't recce'd the vehicle already, I tend to kind of recce it almost every time it's shot at, to be honest, so I don't lose the dice. My idea with this is that we'll put it somewhere which draws shots, hopefully from their big template weapons, and it can recce out the way, so wasting that shot and saving my infantry. As we know, in this game, infantry are gods, really. If I do get a move on it, if it hasn't recce'd and I do get a move, it's trying to put it somewhere right next to them where I can get the rear shot as well as the front shot. It's a bit like running, a lot of the Japanese vehicles have rear mounted machine guns, and a few of the Russian vehicles do as well, and it's trying to make the best use of that extra wee MMG, which isn't really fully pointed, if you can get the use out of it. And that's basically the army. How do I think it's going to fare? Oh, I'm hedging my bets here. I've got a feeling it'll do... We're playing four games. If I won two games, I think I would be quite happy. There's a lot of things this list doesn't do. And I'm really... It's not a list I would normally play. It was a lot of folk know it was chosen for me by listeners of the podcast and the War Room show on YouTube because of the slight controversy from last year. I asked people what was the most difficult list to win with, and they chose the May 1940 Dutch list for me. I have to say, it's actually performing better than I imagined so far. Playing this was played at the GT as a 1250 list by my friend Dave, who is one of the World Team Championships, or is the World Team Championships organiser, and he came about middle of the table. Off the top of my head, I think there was five games. I think he won two, drew one, lost two, or something in that elk. Or did he win three and lose two? Something like that. So I thought it did pretty well with Dave, but then Dave's a good player. With me, not quite this year. We did take, we played a pairs last week at Guns Over the River Blythe in England, and we came third. We were playing the eventual winners on turn two, and we only managed to get four turns in because the game was called short by the tournament organiser. Because there was a shortage of time, we didn't realise it was only going to go to four turns. We had four units in outflank, which we normally outflank turn sort of 4-5. We had to rush them on, and it all didn't go very well. But we ended up being third. So again, I think quite a reasonable result. I was playing 600 points of Dutch, and my pairs partner was playing 600 points of French. So it's going to be fairly interesting to see how these guys work out. Be interesting to know how you think they'll work out. Please don't hesitate to comment either where you're listening to this podcast, or come and join us at the War Room, at the War HQ on Facebook, where this will be posted, and leave your comments. But until the next couple podcast, take care, guys, and mahalo for now. So, you listen to the show. Now it's time to visit thewarhq.co.uk for all your bolt action needs. And remember to use the code POD21, that's POD21, to get 20% off and free postage and packaging. See you in the next show.